So anyhow, in our lesson, we're at point two when our AV person can get that up there. It's the first commandment, and that's Exodus 23, if someone would please read that. Okay, so thou shalt not have any other gods before me, beside me, depending on your translation. We've defined from you from day one when I first came on board here a year and a half ago, I guess it would be almost, that one of the definitions of holy is distinctively different and unique, and sort of the statement of the first commandment states why there is no other God besides God, Jehovah God. And it's kind of an interesting way to look at that. But God is basically saying there is no other God. The whole world screams that there are other gods. There's Allah, there's Brahman, there's Buddha, and all of these other things. Atali Abu had two gods, which was sticky for us to teach. They had a north god and a south god. And fortunately for us, when we went in there, we asked them, well, can you tell us about these gods? And they said, we don't really understand. And we kind of said, okay, thanks. We would like to teach you about God, the one and only God. And they accepted that pretty well. But sometimes it's tricky for missionaries going into areas where there are multiple gods. But God says, as far as God, an eternal creative being, that there is only one true God, despite everything else you have heard and were taught. That's what God declares about himself. And yes, I like sci-fi movies and stuff too, but you know, that's just the way it is. So why should God alone be worshipped then? This is not a trick question. That's right. And why do we credit? So why? You know, so the next part of the question is, why do we credit God? What do we credit God for? Because he is the creator and the sustainer of the universe. And so when I was in college, we had to study this thing called logic. And in the logic, I remember a few years later, one of my Bible teachers telling me the logic, the empirical logic of what God declares about himself is that if he is truly the creator, then the creation must necessarily put their trust in him and listen to him, right? If there truly is a universal supreme creator, then the creation or the creature, if you're King James, would necessarily be responsible to that person. And so that is why, this is something I've repeated maybe last year, so I apologize for that. That is why we have this absolutely fervent effort to dispense with and to completely dismiss creationism. Because if you take away evolution and our connection to the animal kingdom as being a mutation and development from apes, when you take that away, then you come back to this, and this is what the scientists and those who believe in this, the fearful premise that there is a creator, and they can't deal with that. And so they fight tooth and nail to prevent that teaching. And so they work against that. And you can come back, you know, some of you have followed Answers in Genesis and some of these debates. There was one on national television just a few years ago about this. You know how fervently they do not want that premise of a creator there. So that's why. We just talked last week in 1 Corinthians, week before last, we talked about, well, last week too, the prince of the air, and he's the spiritual blindness. This is part of the spiritual blindness. These are very adept and very educated people, but they are spiritually blind. And so this is important for us. And so the aspect of the first commandment here is that it demands worship. The word worship comes from the word worth, by the way, and only God is worthy of adoration and our complete allegiance and obedience. And Isaiah 45:5 says, I am the Lord and there is no other. There is no God besides me. So if people were to worship God the way he commanded, they would never depend on basically anyone or anything else except him for their needs. And so this is one of the most important premises of evangelism and being a light to people in our family or friends or coworkers is getting past this thing. Because right now in our culture, in the last 5 to 10 years, it's actually been going on for a few decades now, there is this increasing willingness to criticize the Bible and the premise that we're talking about this morning. And even I brought this up in a sermon a year or so ago about, you know, we don't need to pray, we just need to do gun control. That was stated by one of the talk heads on TV. So basically, God is not in the picture. You know, but God is the reason for violence, right? God is the lack of allegiance to a creator God, the lack of cognizance of a creator God, and is the reason why we do have violence and that sort of thing. So, but no, but again, the way the prince of the air, Satan, has deceived is that that's not brought into the equation of any discussion. We know that to be wrong. And so we have that. How do we get on to gun control? I have no idea. So I do know why. But again, this is actually a very important understanding here in this first commandment here. So God actually should be the ruler of our life. And yet we're here in our society, especially America, so much else wants to be the ruler of our life. And so we have that. And we have Adam, even Adam, the very first creation, deliberately turning away from God and not putting God in first place in the temptation. He chose to follow his own will and follow that deception that Eve experienced too. So there's a lot of philosophies out here about what is and who is God. And humanism is one of the things that is really rearing its ugly head right now. And humanism basically is saying that man is God, right? And one of the most difficult things for us is in our efforts to evangelize and to be a beacon of light in this community is conversation now where the humanistic excuse is, that's fine what you believe, Daryl, but I'm a spiritual being, and my truth is my truth, and your truth is your truth. That's fine. I mean, it's really insidious if you look at it. And we've talked about that before. But again, Satan is the father of lies. And so what's going on now is this this aspect that people, you can't really speak truth into my life because I am capable of discerning truth within myself. That's absolutely impossible. We cannot do that. We cannot, because we are sinners, therefore we cannot conjure up our own truth, our truth that someone else has told us. It has to be God's truth. So ego is a real problem, but it's a very interesting thing it's been twisted a lot in the last 5 to 10 years. And so this is the way people brush us off now. You know, that's fine. That's fine for you. And I, unfortunately, in college and high school in these last 10 years, as a rep for the mission board, I've heard more and more, even among Christians, Liberty University, Piedmont. You know, I have a friend, you know, and they're this way or that way, and they believe differently. And, you know, I mean, but I, you know, Daryl, I don't mind telling them what I believe in. And the problem is this. It is a problem. And yes, none of us like confrontation, but the gospel is somewhat confrontational, right? And the thing is how can you build a relationship where you can actually have a conversation there? Because, you know, I mean, sometimes, you know, there's just times when we were raising our kids, you just had to turn to them and say, just no. Not because I said so, because you're protecting. You're trying to, you know, we have a responsibility as a parent for the spiritual formation of our children. And so it's important for us. No is part of that. Direction, giving direction is very, very important. And so the Word of God gives us direction. The second commandment here, if someone would read verses 4 through 6, and that's as, probably as far as we'll get today. Okay, so what is a graven image? An idol. Graven, engraved, something that's done by human hands. There's so many verses I could quote here. I've got a ton of them, you know, about the futility of that sort of thing. Having said that, it's just a very common part of our humanity and history. Is you know, we worked with the Taliabu there. Their word for idol is taladain. And it's an image. It actually means like an image, and so they would design these things, and it wasn't a major part of their religious system, but they did. They knew what the word was. They had a word for it in their language, but God is basically saying we absolutely should not worship nature, animals, inanimate objects, and these sort of things. Nothing that's been created. Romans 1 talks about that quite a bit. They worshiped the not the creator, but the created. And so this God is a jealous God. I'm not going to go into that this morning, but he expects worship from his creation. And so he is supreme and sovereign, greater than anything he ever created. I like to look at it this way. If you've been to the Rocky Mountains, or you've been to some of these wonderful Luray Caverns or Natural Bridge, I'm thinking of just in our own state here, many other states, wonderful Yellowstone, beautiful places. You are in awe. You are inspired by this thing. Now think about the one who created that, right? That's the way we should be thinking. That's the way we should be worshiping. I think it was at Psalm 19 that talks about all the wondrous things that God has done in nature. It should elicit from us praise for him. So we don't know what God looks like. It's sort of an effort for people to come up with something. People like to look at something, but God is a spirit. And, you know, this is kind of the way the idolatry works. People want to look at something, touch something, you know, rub something. If in Islam, you know, sometimes when people are walking to the mosque, they're rubbing these beads. And, you know, if I've got my Buddhist Indonesian friend there, Herman, he's got an altar in his house there and a picture of his dead grandmother who he prays to and for, that her soul will not go to hell. I don't know how many more years he has to do that. And incense burning there. I've been in Japan and seen Shinto temples and on, Kyle and I saw, what was that, the goddess there in Penang, Malaysia, that was really unbelievable. Oh, what was her name? Huge. I would say three stories high. And they were in the process of renovating. And the gold plating, or what was it? Oh, yeah. Yeah, so the goddess, okay, get this. They got scaffolding around the goddess. She needs a fix. Okay. Just think about that. Huh? Yeah, it could be something like Penang. It's very famous. And it's actually not a very common religion. Was it Taoism? Yeah, a form of Taoism, which is another kind of branch off of Buddhism. But, I mean, it was quite amazing, this huge thing.
It was gold-plated?
Brass or bronze. It was bright. They were, but tarnished, you know, green, you know. And, you know, you're sitting there, and I'm watching this. This young college student, I remember that he had his books, like he was there, you know, with his incense, and he's doing all this to the scaffolded goddess there. And I'm thinking, like, wow, this is so ironic. I've got pictures somewhere. I'll try to find those pictures if I can and bring them, show one Sunday morning. Anyhow, the culprit behind all this, as we finish up today, is Satan, who leads people away from the truth. And that's the last thought I leave with you today as we transition here. And we'll see you next week. And I need to remember about these, so.